Hello, welcome Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. I am Shaka Saleh. And today, Ghana is one of West Africa's most stable countries. Since 1992, it has held multi-party elections that have led to peaceful transfers of power. Today, we turn our focus to a prominent force in Ghana's political history. Former First Lady Nana Akufo-Addo Dramani Rawlings. She has just written a book called It Takes a Woman. VOA's Paul Ndiho has more on the story.
This is particularly the curse.
You have probably heard of the saying that behind every successful man, there is a strong woman. Nana Akufo-Addo Dramani Rawlings, Ghana's former first lady, is a perfect example of one. She was thrust into the political limelight when her husband, Jerry John Rawlings, seized power in Ghana in successive coups, first in 1979 and then in 1981. He ruled the country until 2001. Some scholars say the secret to much of Jerry Rawlings' success is his wife. Mrs. Rawlings was elected first vice chairperson of Ghana's National Democratic Congress, NDC, in 2009. 2 years later, she challenged the later president, John Atta Mills, in a bid to be the ruling party's presidential candidate, but she lost. In 2016, she became the first woman in Ghana to run for president. In an election that dubbed her the African Hillary Clinton, Rawlings lost after garnering less than 1% of the national vote. Her supporters blamed a narrow electoral college and too few women delegates for her defeat. But analysts say, besides Ghana's founding father and first president Kwame Nkrumah, perhaps no other political leader has made such an impact on Ghana than Jerry Rawlings. Mrs. Rawlings is also known for being a fierce advocate for women's rights. She's the founder of the 31st December Women's Movement, an organization that works to eliminate poverty among women and children. In her memoir, Mrs. Rawlings writes about championing the cause of women and underserved citizens while her husband worked to transform Ghana into a model of African democracy. Today, working class people widely cite her husband, Jerry Rawlings, as one of Ghana's best presidents. And while they remain an influential political power couple, the country remains split over the Rawlings' legacy. Some point to Jerry Rawlings' political association with violence and see him as a military dictator whose forces Revolutionary Council executed 8 senior military officers, including 3 former heads of state. Others are willing to forgive the violence and human rights abuses as necessary steps to achieve lasting change and those who suffered under his rule. In 1992, Mr. Rawlings resigned from the military, founded the National Democratic Congress, and became the first president of the Fourth Republic. He was re-elected in 1996 for a second term. He currently serves as the African Union envoy to Somalia. Ghana has remained a peaceful and a thriving democracy, but lags behind other African countries such as Uganda, South Africa, Rwanda in women's political participation. Since 2001, 4 other leaders, all men, have served as presidents. They include John Ajekum Kufuor, was president of Ghana from January 7, 2001 to January 7, 2009. John Evans Atta Mills, president of Ghana from 2009 to 2012. He is the first Ghanaian head of state to die in office. John Dramani Mahama first served as the vice president, who later took over the presidency after the death of his predecessor. John Mahama was later elected and served a full time to January 7, 2017. President Nana Akufo-Addo has been in office since January 2017. Paul Ndiho, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul Ndiho, for that interesting report. Joining us here in studio is the former First Lady herself, Nana Akufo-Addo Dramani Rawlings. I have to say, Nana, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa for the first time, mind you.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. So you actually finally came to do the show.
Yes.
It's great.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
How was the trip so far?
It's been tiring.
Very, very tiring.
Yes, because we jumped into three different states. And but it's been rewarding as well. So.
And what are you here for? Is it about publicizing your book?
I think it's more...
It Takes a Woman?
Not so much publicizing it, but I was invited by different universities to come and speak to it with political science students. So it's been worthwhile.
And you just came from Howard University?
Exactly.
How was it like?
Oh, it went well, and the students asked a lot of pertinent questions, and I'll say they were quite well informed about the country Ghana,
mm-hmm.
But more importantly, they were interested in knowing about the future of Africa. So both ways, it was gratifying. It was.
Talk to us about what inspired the book.
Well, the book, I started writing something about my work with women and children.
Mm-hmm.
And in the course of writing it, I had a discussion with my mother. And she asked me, "Do Ghanaians know you?" And I was taken aback. I said, "Of course they know me." She said, "No, do they know you?" So I said, "Ma, I think you have something you want to tell me. So tell me about it." She said, "They don't know you."
That is Mrs. Felicia Ajiman,
who has passed in the last 3 years,
yes,
almost.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. And so she said, "Sit down and let me talk to you." Like I was back in her house as a little girl.
Yes.
And she said, "They don't know you. All they know is you were married to Jerry Rawlings or President Rawlings, and that's it. So for you to be able to come out with any book, let people know where you've come from, who you are, what's your parentage, who are your family members, you know, all these things make you into who you are. So write about that, and then you bring in whatever is present, you know." So I thought about it, and I said yes, and I've been gathering information and documenting some data and details about my family issues,
mm-hmm.
my grandfather's issues, my great-grandfather, both from, you know, from both parents.
Mm.
And so I said, "She's right. It's important for me to actually speak to it. And then later on, I can talk about my political life." So that's what I did.
And how did you finally settle at the title, "It Takes a Woman"?
Mm.
I know that you and Hillary Rodham Clinton are very good friends.
Yeah.
I remember seeing this huge portrait in your house in Accra.
Yes.
Where you and Mrs. Clinton are wearing some of the most gorgeous pieces of kente cloth that I've ever seen.
Thank you. Indeed, we've been friends for some time, since they became President and First Lady, and we've worked very closely together before.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you leave office, you kind of you are driven apart, sort of. We shouldn't be so.
Yes.
But yes, you did see that picture.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, you did.
Yes, indeed. And and we talked a little bit about her and you.
Mm.
And what about? You know, again, the title, It Takes
a Woman.
And you know as well as I do that your friend also has a book which basically says, "It Takes a Village to Raise a Child."
Yeah. Let me start with the "It Takes a Woman," and then I'll move into the "It Takes a Village." my grand aunt, both she and that's my grandfather's sister. Mm-hmm. Both she and I were named after the Queen Mother, Ohima Akwedu. And Ohima Akwedu's name, the name Kunedu is fight to the end.
Yes.
That's the translation. So she used to tell me a lot of traditional history. Mm-hmm. And she said, look, women are powerful in the Ashanti Kingdom, and gave me reasons why. But at the same time, she said, our king is powerful. Your grandfather's father, that's your great-grandfather,
yes,
was a king.
You are royalty. In fact, I've never had you referred to as princess.
No, I usually don't. Nana. The Nana is enough.
Really?
Yeah, it means you're part of royalty.
You're so modest.
Yes. So she said to me that even though the king of the Ashantis, mm-hmm, is very powerful when he finally ascends onto the throne, mm, for him to be able to cross that, you know, threshold to get onto the throne, mm-hmm, it takes a woman.
It takes a woman.
It takes a woman.
Very
so
interesting.
You need a woman to actually propel the king to become a king.
Very
so then I use that as my title. It takes a woman. I'm playing on words, actually.
Right.
Because at the same time, I'm talking about the women who have made a difference in our lives.
Correct.
Historically and, you know, from a personal point of view and from family point of view as well.
Now, talking about it takes a woman, mm, you know, to make all those sorts of important things, it seems to me in reading your book that there are two very important women in your life. One of them, your late mother, who was apparently opposed to your marriage to a flight lieutenant, Jerry John Rawlings.
Yes.
And also, apparently, flight lieutenant Jerry John Rawlings'
mother
herself was not particularly enthusiastic about the whole thing.
Yeah.
Except that your father was very much for it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would you believe that if, in fact, your father had supported your mother, we probably wouldn't be talking about such a book?
Yes, maybe. Maybe, but who knows?
Mm-hmm.
When two people are in love, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
That you can actually maybe turn your back on family issues and still go ahead, because it is done. I may not have done it because of my upbringing.
Right.
But, you may be right.
But what
it may not have happened.
But what did your mom particularly have against, not particularly Jerry John Rawlings, but the fact that he was identified with the armed forces, that he was an army officer?
I think in those days there was a misconception that army officers practice their strength first on their wives and then their children. A misconception.
Really?
Yeah. But because people will be like, you're going to marry a military man. Are you not afraid he's going to beat you? I'm like, no. Oh, you're going to marry a policeman? What if he's beating you?
So no. What did you...
It's a misconception.
What about you? What did you particularly admire about the flight?
Sally, have you read
lieutenant?
My book?
Of course I have. I know you met at Hashimoto.
No.
You first met in another school.
Mm-hmm.
But then later, really, you were in the same class at Hashimoto.
Absolutely.
The school of, it reminds me, Kwejira Agre.
Exactly.
Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, you met there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is very interesting because for some strange reason, it's not only Ghanaians or Ashantis that happen to be very conservative when it comes to perceptions about army officers.
Oh.
Where I come from, Uganda.
Yes.
I also happen to have been in the armed forces.
Mm.
I was not, unlike Jerry John, I was not a pirate, but I was a paratrooper.
Oh.
And I was an officer.
Close.
And a gentleman.
Mm.
But I remember a friend of mine in Uganda who once said, if I had met you in that smart uniform, as smart as it might have been, I would have run away to the nearest tall grass.
See? So it's not only Ghana then.
No.
And not only my mother. Even your friend.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know what it is, but I think it also has something to do with a huge misconception. And stories that we hear about the police, the military, as we're growing up. Today, it's a little more, I think it's a little less, because the military camps are within the cities.
Mm-hmm.
But in those days, they were far removed from the cities. And to go to any camp, mm-hmm. I mean, really, you're asking for trouble.
It's very interesting.
It may not be true, but that was what the misconception was about.
What is interesting is that both, for example, Ghana and Uganda, mm-hmm. were basically colonies, really, of Britain.
British, yeah.
And when mm-hmm. you think about it, the last time I checked, the husband of Queen Elizabeth II happens to be a military man.
He really is.
And mm-hmm. her sons and grandsons.
You see?
Very interesting.
Mm. Mm.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Now, how has this book been received so far? First and foremost, at home.
At home, I've done very little publicity on it.
Mm-hmm.
I did only one launch, and a number of radio stations have asked me to speak to it,
mm-hmm.
and television stations as well.
I saw you on Metro Television.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Ah, yeah. Okay, I remember. Yes, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the other producers had actually read the book before inviting me.
Right.
As against the Metro TV one,
mm-hmm.
which had not been read thoroughly before being mm-hmm. invited. So the latest interviews have been pretty much in-depth and mm-hmm. have been quite thorough.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, it has delved into the whys and whats and, you know, and the main content of the book, which for me is better.
Right.
So after doing this program, don't just your program, I mean the program in the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
we have another program in the U.K. Towards the end of the month, and then we have other programs again in the U.S. and other universities. It's been sort of... So I believe that I can say without any possible doubt that it's going pretty well.
Now, for those who may be interested in your book,
yes.
It Takes a Woman,
yeah.
How can they get it other than Amazon?
Amazon and Barnes & Nobles in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. And what about in Africa?
In Ghana, it's in the university library, university bookshop, and all the... Oh, I haven't done well. It just escaped me.
Mm.
All the there are some bookshops in almost every region that you can find this book. It's
can one get it, for example, in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi?
Maybe not.
Why? Why not?
I haven't been able to do that.
What about South Africa?
South Africa, Johannesburg. I have spoken to some publishers and bookshop owners, and they did say they would get back to me. So I really have to push the agenda. So I was thinking that maybe in November
mm-hmm.
we can sort of finalize something for them to have the books.
And for my selfish reasons, what about Uganda?
Well,
can
okay.
someone get it in a Kampala bookshop?
Okay, if you help me, I'll get some. If I have at least one contact, I'll start my discussion with the bookshop owner and see how we can get some of the books there.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
But I want to talk about It Takes a Village.
Yes, of course.
You know, in...
To Raise a Child.
Yes.
Mm.
In 1994,
mm-hmm.
I came to the U.S. to come and study in Johns Hopkins University.
Yes, Johns Hopkins, yes.
Yes, and my friend Hillary invited me for tea in the White House. So I went to the White House, and she wanted to know about the movement and my organization, mm-hmm. and the work I was doing with children and the daycare centers and so on. So I briefed her about it, and she asked me what laws we are using for the daycare centers. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, no law has been made for me, but because of our system, our traditional system, it is easy for us to have children mm-hmm. and look after them as if they are our own. And then I told her the story about how in our setup, when we were children, your parents will go out, your mother is going to the market, maybe your father is going to the office, and you children are in the house, and they tell the neighbor, keep an eye on those kids. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And so if you misbehave, first the neighbor disciplines you and beats you. Mm-hmm. Your mother comes, she tells her, and she beats you. Mm-hmm. Father comes, and you get a third beating.
Yes.
So I was telling Hillary that actually in our setup, it doesn't take a family or a mother to raise a child. It takes a whole village. So I was very happy when she wrote her book and named it, It Takes a Village.
It's very interesting because I grew up in the same sort of circumstances, mm-hmm. really, when you think about it. The village had interests pretty much about every family that was part
of
the village.
Absolutely.
Very interesting.
Isn't it?
Yeah, very interesting. Now, you also, of course, come from a very very political sort of pedigree, really. Mm-hmm. Your father was a very good politician, an astute politician, mm-hmm. friend of some of the most important politicians in Ghana, mm-hmm. including your first founding or independence Prime Minister, later President, mm-hmm. the Osagyefo, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah.
That's correct.
And Kofi Busia.
Absolutely.
Who happened to be the leader of opposition and later, of course, becoming Prime Minister.
Yes.
Of the Republic of Ghana. Very interesting.
It is.
Also have, you have had a shot at the presidency, mm-hmm. 2016.
Yes, that's also true.
What happened?
What happened? Fortunately or unfortunately, we had an electoral commissioner who decided that six parties or seven parties were going to be struck off the list for whatever reasons.
And yours were,
and I was
happened
one.
To be one
I,
of them.
I happened to be one. And so we all took it to court independently of each other. Mm-hmm. And her reasons were so bizarre, and didn't hold water. So we fought it in court, and all the way to the Supreme Court actually ordered her to put us back on the list.
Yes,
because what she was doing was undemocratic and unconstitutional.
Correct.
And so she was forced to put us back. That's what happened. But she made sure she wasted all the time. So we got back on the list almost 3 weeks to the election time also. That's what happened.
It's very unfortunate.
It is.
Now, it's interesting that Ghana has been fast in many things. Mm-hmm. For example, on March 6, 1957, it was the first black African country mm-hmm. to regain her political independence from Britain, mm-hmm. a European power. You remember that the Black Stars were basically the pride of the African continent when it came mm-hmm. to football.
Yes.
Your friend, the late Kofi Annan, was the first black man to be the Secretary General of the United Nations.
That's correct.
And he seems to have done a remarkable job.
He sure did.
Any particular reason why Ghana, for example, has not been the first country on the African continent mm-hmm. to produce a president who happens to be female. That distinction, of course, goes to another West African country, Liberia. That is where you had the first democratically elected female president, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf.
Yes.
Any particular reason why Ghana fell short of that? Because you, even culturally, you do have, for example, communities like the former Ashanti Kingdom, and probably the Akan people, really, where you can inherit through female.
Yes.
Your culture is a matrilineal.
Yeah, that's correct.
Whereas most of Africa is patrilineal.
Okay. You're absolutely right. Shaka, I have not given this very deep thought, but because if you look at the amount of work that I personally did on getting women to be recognized as an absolute part of nation building and national development.
Yes.
And they accepted it as well. The women accepted it.
Yes.
And you look at partisan political activity.
Uh-huh.
How we move forward and fight for what we believe in. But at the same time, we will not put ourselves up for that election. We rather support another person and push and work hard, really assiduously, to get that person elected. So we need to look into our psyche, our being, and try to understand why. I think that part of the reason, and I may be wrong, but I think part of the reason is very traditional. This traditional setups that actually hinder the
girl child.
Originally, but now the girl child's position has been magnified and improved upon. So, and a lot of laws have been made to protect us, the girl child, and to even get more women into universities and all that. But there's still this traditional thing that. While I'm saying it takes a woman to put the Ashanti King on the stool.
That's right.
Yes, but after the enthronement, then we take a back seat.
And how come, in fact, a woman cannot become queen?
In some areas, yes. But there are queen mothers.
Yes, queen mothers, of course, are there. Yes.
And I can share this with you.
Queen. Yes.
I can share this with you that years ago, my father got me to sit with Prempeh II and have a discussion with him. A lot of the information I got from him as well. And then again with Opokuwari, the one who came after him.
I've been to Opokuwari school.
Okay.
In Kumasi. And spoken to the students.
Okay.
Yeah, just like I had also to go to Prempeh College, where one of your former presidents, of course, John Kufuor, went to school. Yes.
That's correct. That's correct. And you know, he asked me to speak to them because it was on the basis of where the Queen Mother was and how she was placed in the, you know, lineup.
In the hierarchy.
Order. Yes.
Yes.
And how, through British colonialism, they made sure that they reversed it and actually kept the women at a certain level. Because they couldn't deal with the truthfulness of the Queen Mothers.
And yet they were doing the right thing back
indeed.
In England.
Indeed.
Very interesting.
And they couldn't deal, because when the Queen Mother says it's no, it's no. She doesn't back away. When it's yes, it's yes. She doesn't back away. So they couldn't deal with the Queen Mothers and thought, you know, let's get these women out of the way and just make the men in charge. And then if the women want to be part of it, they can select the king and move back to the kitchen kind of thing. So you have these nuances that we're having to still grapple with.
Very interesting. What about, when I think about it, you have actually been in leadership since you were really very, very young.
That's true.
For example, at the university. At the Kwame Nkrumah University of Science and Technology. You, the last time I checked, you were a leader in Africa Hall.
Yes, that's true. Huh? That's correct.
You were in African Hall, Africa Hall. And when you were first lady, you also became president. You became president at one time of the 31st December Women
Movement. Yeah, which I helped to found. Really, with the second one, it was more political than anything else, because the leader of the revolution was saying that we must have a situation where everybody is part of the change that is going on in Ghana. Mm. But you couldn't see visibly any women with them on anything. And if we're going to all be a part of the change that's going on, and we don't see women, then it's just a change for men, right, Shaga? So I thought, okay, let me pick this and run with it, go through the regions to the towns and villages, and tell the women, at least now we've got a leader who says we should all be part of this new participatory democracy. So let's get up and be part of it, you know. Join me and let's push this so that we can actually make an absolute part of the change that's going on. So yes, indeed, I did that. And it was also an important time for me personally, because I felt that that would be the one time that women's voices were clearly heard. And we should not let it pass us by and not be able to become this voice that will push women's agendas.
Unfortunately, Nana, there happens to be no democracy in Studio 47. When the producer says go, you have to go, just like a good soldier on a parade square.
Mm.
You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of our discussion in a moment, so please don't go away, because we'll be right back with you.
On Our Voices, we're talking about the news and issues you're talking about, sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower, and change the rules. It's time for Our Voices with me, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick,
and Hadiza Kiari,
and Ayan Bior,
and Orion Itangi Shaka.
It's time for Our Voices.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them today, not tomorrow. So let's connect, let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies.
Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known.
It's Upfront every Wednesday, 1730 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
We appreciate all of the audience feedback. Straight Talk Africa streams every Wednesday on Facebook. You can watch our show there and leave a comment. Now let's look at what's on tap for next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the Africa Export-Import Bank strives to increase the continent's share in global trade and promote growth. AfrexiBank and the future on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Today we are talking about the life and times of the former First Lady of Ghana, Nana Akonadu Ajemani Rawlings. And I have to say, of course, that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Yes? Yes, I can hear you. Yes, yeah, so, like I said, there's no democracy in Studio 47. You just have to follow the instructions
Absolutely.
Of the producer. I hope you'll find some space in your beautiful Ghanaian heart to forgive me for that.
No problem.
Thank you very much. Now, let me ask you this question. You would like to be the individual that gets the opportunity, possibly the first female Ghanaian president. If you had to get the opportunity to be the first female Ghanaian president, first of all, why do you sincerely think you are the right female for that honor? Mm-hmm. What makes you tick, really?
Okay, Shaka, what makes me tick has nothing to do with wanting to be the first president of the Republic of Ghana.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that the institutions that we have in our country that really need to be strengthened, whether we like it or not, mm-hmm. those are the institutions that can actually buffer us and guide us through this partisan political groupings.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I believe that we should look at our traditional setups.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that actually makes us who we are as a people? If we go to the Nzima land, what is it that makes them respect and listen to their leaders, their chiefs?
You're talking about Nkrofu.
No, Nzima.
The place where Nkrofu.
Nkrofu is just a little town. Yes. So Nzima is a big area.
Yes.
Nkrofu is a tiny village.
Correct.
You know, town.
Correct.
So, and if you go to Bronhafu, for example, what is it that makes us listen to the kings and queens, the chiefs,
yes.
when they speak, what is it that touches our soul? We go to Ashanti, what is it? We go to Volta, the same, northern region. So there's something within our traditional setting that makes us do what is right and what is proper.
Very interesting.
Yes. And if we could harness that, you ask me if I, what one thing that I would do, so I'm giving it to you.
Yes.
If we could harness this and bring it in tangent with the modern political setups, I think it will help us in actualizing our political fora and our political nations politically, let me put it that way, than to just abandon it and go along with the multi-party system, which is very alien to us.
I see.
Most importantly, Shaka, if I have a little area that I run as a chief in Ghana, I can actually ask the people to do X and not to do Y, and they'll obey it because the king says so, because the chief says so.
Because we have
because
integrity.
It is right, there's integrity in our tradition.
Character.
Exactly. Which we are not finding in this multi-party system. So I would say we should try and marry the two and see how we can actually bring the traditional ruling, not necessarily making chiefs the presidents or anything, but the setup, the rules and regulations, the do's and don'ts that are within the setup into governance. Modern governance.
Very interesting.
Yes, I think this is what will help us.
I'll come later and ask you to talk about the vision thing.
Okay.
But for now, let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone calls and Skypes and what have you, and see what is there. We have a Skype, apparently, a caller now from Germany. Mona, how are you?
Fine. How are you, Shaka? Thanks for hosting.
Shaka? Yes, please.
Thanks for hosting Madame Nana. She's such an inspiration.
Oh, you're most welcome. You're most welcome. And you were trying to ask me how I am, and I will tell you I remain simple, easy, and awesome.
That is very beautiful.
Thanks for
hosting her. Yep. I would like to ask Madame Nana.
Sure.
Really, we have seen the women being emancipated. At the same time, she was the first lady. She can give a clue to other first ladies. What are the major roles? What are some of the roles that the first ladies can play in public without antagonizing the office of the presidencies? Because we have seen very many first ladies do not come out to help their husbands, even where women are supposed to be helped, or children, they're just keeping quiet. What do you think are some of the roles that first ladies and their families, that is if they have girls or boys, that can play in public without antagonizing the office of the presidency? Thank you so much. From German, Dosten.
You're most welcome. And in fact, you must be, or at least should be, an expert on that, Nana, because the last time I checked, you almost held that position for about 2 decades?
About.
Yeah, that's about really being permanent
and
pensionable first lady. Go for it.
Well, I think it is difficult to force any lady, first lady, to take up a duty. I was in a particular place at a particular time, and I decided I'm not going to waste this moment.
You're welcome.
I'm going to try and utilize it to the benefit of Ghanaian women and children, and to the benefit of Ghana. So I set out to do the things that I felt will make women and children become better. Economically, socially, politically, and culturally.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing this, of course, you have those who will be against you, but the majority were with me in all the regions, because they saw that their women were so busy working, and it was bringing income into their family homes.
Mm.
So I think the individual must take that decision. I went to IFAD in Rome, Italy.
Mm-hmm.
They invited me because they were asking me, what can we do to get the rest of the first ladies on the continent to do something that you're like what you're doing?
IFAD is a UN organization.
It is a UN organization.
With, agriculture. And
agriculture, yes. Mm-hmm. The Agriculture Fund and Development.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you can't force them. You can invite all of us and ask each one what they would like to do. I am doing a multifaceted project. You know, with a multifaceted approach.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we can get somebody to do children, get somebody to do orphans, somebody to do the health of children, somebody to do women, women's issues on something, but or the environment, but get them into their comfort zone.
Yes.
Don't force anybody. So they had this conference, and the women were themselves saying what they wanted to do. And IFAD supported all the women of Africa. Even if you had one thing that you wanted to do with orphans.
Really?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
They
and
deliver.
So at the time, everybody delivered.
Yes.
I don't know about now what is happening. But I think it's important if we can get women interested in something. Our first lady, I think, is doing something on maternal health.
Mm.
So you can always get somebody to deal with maybe teenage pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else in another country can look at the diseases that affect children and help to reduce it. And so there's so many things that can be done just to propel their countries in a positive way.
No, I think that During that period when you were First Lady of the Republic of Ghana, you must obviously have been done and been involved in a lot of things. But if you were to kindly put a finger on something, something that is very important to you and to the people of Ghana, what would you say, for example, that was the most important decision that you made? And two, what about, if any, the single most regrettable decision that you were able to make during that same period?
Wow, that's tough. I think I'll put my hand on the early childhood development centers.
Mm-hmm.
Because I felt that if we're able to get these early childhood development centers working in every village,
yes,
every child has a head start into education.
Correct.
Every child, because what I was doing was I give the child an opportunity to be in that school.
Mm-hmm.
I change your diet by making the food nutritious,
mm-hmm,
with normal things that we grow,
mm-hmm,
that we can actually improve on the diet for the children.
And the families and reacted the family, appropriately.
Yes,
yes.
Yes. And I'll make sure that they get the I think at that time it was circular disease inoculation and vaccination.
Mm.
And, you know, little things that made the children better than they were. So that the children at some point will become the multiplier changes that will happen in the villages. So today, for example, I have young people who come to me and they're like, we would never have gone to school.
Really?
Yes, but because of you, we have our master's degree.
And how does that feel?
Oh, gosh, so good. Really good. I mean, but I'm talking about the one thing that you have asked. But you need to have that and something to make it comprehensive.
Right.
So you asked me for one, so I've given you one.
What about the single most regrettable?
The single most regretful thing is the fact that I was not able to let Ghanaians know that I was not getting any money from the government.
Right.
Not 1 cent.
Really?
Yeah, I literally had to travel every time I needed to get something for women and children. I was going to, in those days when nobody was going to China, I was. Every 2 years I was in China.
Really?
Yeah, I was in Japan, I was in Austria, I was in the United States. I was in, name it, anywhere that I could get help.
You had relationship, very good relationships with the People's Republic of China very
absolutely
early on. I know
at
that.
You know that.
Yes, because you showed me, for example, one of the most beautiful theaters anywhere in Accra, built, which is a handwork of the Chinese at the time. Yeah.
When nobody was doing business with them.
Mm.
So it's a regrettable thing for me because I was not able to tell the story, which I think in my next book I will do so.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody thought that the state was giving me money. I didn't get any money from the state at all. At all. So if I thought that there was a program running that I could get more women to be involved in it, then I start going to the minister and begging them that, look, this program will be very good if you bring more women into it because they can do X, Y, Z, and they will earn an income. But the guys will still be in charge. I mean, I'm not saying they should take over or anything like that. And that kind of worked in some places, but that was rare.
Really?
Most of the money was coming from outside, and I was not able to tell my story. So everybody thought, ah, yeah, she had it easy. She had money from the government.
Why didn't you sell the idea to the president, who also happened to be your husband?
For him to give us money?
Yes.
Oh, you're kidding me? No, let me tell you a story.
Mm. But your husband, the you know, one thing I know about him, sincerely, I think he's a believer in what I would call social, economic, political justice.
Absolutely.
For all.
Yes, but it that's where it ends. It does not stretch over to giving his wife something.
You mean he just talks the talk, does not walk the talk?
No, I don't mean that.
Yeah.
He believes it.
Yes.
And so he's working towards it. But in stretching it to me, I think he just felt it was a conflict of interest.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Because the first time we're looking for a huge oven to work and bake more bread and be able to send it to various hospitals and so on, because I was making money from that as well.
Mm-hmm.
I was supplying Gary and palm oil to the armed forces, mm-hmm, from the women.
Yes.
And then I send the money back to them so they can continue producing. The first time I went to him, because the executives were like, we want to buy a bigger oven. Why don't you go to your husband and ask him if he can give us a loan, which we will pay, you know. And I keep saying, I stupidly said, yes, I'll go and check. And I went to the seat of government, the castle. They were having a meeting, so I was waiting. And his ADC came and said, oh, he said he'll see you in 2 minutes. So don't make it long because they're busy. I said, no, just one little thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked him, I told him that, we're wondering if he can put in a word with the Minister of Finance to give us a loan of 250,000 at that time, CDs.
What would that be, for example, in US dollars?
At that time, it may have been maybe $25,000.
About $25,000.
Yeah. And he said, what did you say? So I repeated. He said, yeah, I've heard you doing this with the women and all that. And I told him, we will pay you. We'll pay back to the state.
Right.
He said, but if you're going to pay, then go to the bank. If you're worth your salt, go to the bank. I said, I should go to the bank. Yes, go to the bank. So I said, okay. So it's a no then.
Yeah.
He said, I said, go to the bank. And use your skills to get the money.
But suppose you had gone to the bank manager, Nana, and said, the president is behind this.
Oh, no, I can't do that.
Why?
It's not ethical. It's not right.
But you were adding value to Ghanaians.
I know. You know, originally we had gone to the bank. And the bank asked for a collateral.
Mm-hmm. Security.
Security. And nobody had the security. In the long run, we used my mother's house.
Really?
Yes, to be able to get the loan to buy the oven.
Why did your mother agree to be part of that?
Because she believed in the quality of the work I was doing.
It
and
takes
she believed,
a woman.
Oh, yes, it takes a woman.
Yes.
It absolutely does.
I like that.
Now, yeah.
Nana, let's talk about the vision thing. What is your vision for Ghana?
I'm not the president.
You are not the president, but
the president.
You are a leader.
Yeah, I'm just stating for a fact that I am not the president.
And you so an aspiring, and you an aspiring president?
Not now, no. I was.
Yes.
I was. Not now.
Mm.
I can speak in my capacity as a citizen of Ghana.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are in the seat, you know the left, right, front, and back.
Right.
So you know what the issues are. I don't.
Yes.
So I'm going to speak as a lay person.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yes, sure.
All right. If I had Ghana in my hand,
mm-hmm,
I've said one thing already about trying to bridge the traditional and
culture.
And what?
Culture.
Yeah, the culture with modern politics. Because I feel that if we are able to do that, it will recondition all our minds into knowing that it's important to care about Ghana and make Ghana work. And then through that, we would also know that if everybody were pilfering from Ghana, Ghana cannot stand on its feet.
So
that is one thing, other thing that I would try to use tradition to address. Because as we were growing up, we were all told that for you to steal, it's not nice when you say it in English. For you to take money that is not yours,
right?
Let the money get embarrassed.
Right.
Let me put it that way. I think you understand it better.
It is not only illegal, but it's
immoral
and unethical.
Totally immoral and unethical.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the traditional thing can sometimes reinforce our behavior and our behavior, behavioral patterns to such an extent that there are certain things that we would just not do if we just put ourselves into a traditional setting. So that's one thing that I think we should look at. The second thing, Shaka, is the fact that if we look at our countries,
mm-hmm.
and we try to let the young people in the countries become very nationalistic, where as American kids they will sing their national anthem, they will say their national pledge, we do the same and feel an affinity to our country, so that there are certain things we will just not do because of upbringing and loving our country. Now the third thing that I think I would personally do is to make sure that law enforcement agencies, be it the police, be it the immigration, be it the military, whatever, understand these norms.
Mm.
And we as individuals should keep politics away from them. Partisan politics, because it's good when every human being in Ghana understands the political issues. It's very good.
Understands.
But now, not partisan.
Yes.
So that they can do their work without fear.
To put their country above everything else.
To put the country above everything else. These are the three things I think I'll look at.
The introductory package suggested that Ghana is a democratic nation.
Mm-hmm.
And it is true that you have had several peaceful transitions of power from one party to another, from one individual to another.
Mm-hmm.
But if I may ask you this question, Nana, who is the primary stakeholder of Ghana? Is it the average Ghanaian citizen?
It should be.
But is it the Ghanaian citizen?
But it should be.
Right.
Yes. And that's why we all have to be responsible.
Well,
absolute responsibility.
Unfortunately, it seems to me that, again, as far as my producer is concerned, we probably need another edition.
Okay, good.
On that note, our distinguished guest is the former First Lady of Ghana, Nana Akonedo Ajimani Rawlings. Thanks to our audience for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Ghana. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.
Thank you.